Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today we have two guests in studio, Mark Dowling and Paul Herrera. Mark Dowling has more than 20 years of experience in real estate and community development experience. Mark serves as the Chief Executive Officer for the nonprofit Inland Valleys Association of Realtors, or IVAR. With more than 4,000 members, IVAR is one of the largest realtor associations in California. At its core, IVAR provides a variety of support services that helps its members be more competitive in the real estate marketplace. Key services include realtor education and training, government affairs advocacy, multiple listing services, and professional standards mediation. Paul Herrera serves as an advocate for realtors and their clients on local issues, helping to preserve and protect property rights and the value of homeownership, working with colleagues at the California Association of Realtors and the National Association of Realtors. Paul helps members make a difference for their clients at the local, state, and federal levels.
We're back with Mark and Paul. We just had read that quote that basically said that the debt, and it sounds so reasonable. You know, the guy that's buying the house gets the benefit of the retrofit, so naturally he can pick up the payment, and it sounds fine, except for there's a lender, let's say, in the transaction that is saying, well, wait a minute. Even if it's a free and clear house, it's not a free and clear house now, and if I do a loan for the new purchaser, I'm going to sit in second position, not in first.
And that has been the primary problem, is that that lender in most cases is backed by Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or by FHA insurance.
What percentage of the time? 95?
Right. It's about 90% of any finance transaction in our market, and about 70% of every sale in our market.
Okay.
So you're talking about the vast majority of the marketplace is reliant on government-backed financing. And those government agencies have said that they will not accept second position on these loans. Therefore, the loans get jammed up. And we've seen many, many deals fall out of escrow. There have been some responses to that, and we see some promises that are improving it, and we see a future in which this may not be an issue. But this has been an issue, and it's been a destructive one for the past couple of years.
So, go ahead.
In addition to the lender having a problem for the buyer relative to doing the loan on the property, there's a common sense issue here, which is the buyer is now looking at paying full market value for a property. Let's say the house is appraised at $300,000 and they're willing to pay that $300,000, only to be told in addition to that $300,000 purchase, they also have to finance another $30,000 in improvements that are now leaned against the property for improvements in windows, roof, etc. So consumers now are saying, well, wait a minute, when I'm paying full market value for the property, why would I be paying extra for these other items? I mean, it's essentially like buying a car and then being told afterwards that the engine is a separate bill and you have to pay for that on a different payment schedule.
Yeah, you'd almost have to force the appraisal world to say, can you acknowledge the 30 grand bump because we put in some new windows and a roof? And then that starts dictating something we really don't want.
Which could be a reduced property value. They would have to lower the value of the property to offset the lien.
Well, or they'd have to raise it and say, okay, yeah, well, for this one, even though it's the same square footage, it's worth $330 because it has new windows. I mean, unintended consequences galore for that one, right?
Sure. Because, this has been a major point of contention for us.
You know, it's sort of the flavor of the month in a way. I mean, I know we have water issues and we have solar issues, but we could have a list of other issues show up that could qualify for such a program.
Oh, sure. This is a very creative use of taxation and the definitions of community improvements. The system is very similar to one that finances parks and sewers and street lights and streets, and those are community improvements. But there's also been a very clear distinction that if you finance something that benefits one home, that is not something that's appropriate for taxation. That's why you have consumer lending and individuals spending their own money. This blurred the lines and said, well, if you save money, you save electricity, that benefits the entire community, not just that one home. So we're going to afford it the status of being a tax, and we're going to levy it on this one property.
How are the payments? Are they amortized fully, and are they always fixed? Do we know the structure of the loans?
They are fully fixed payments. There's one very slight item that can change. There's an administrative fee that is charged and can change year by year, but it's not gonna change more than a few, 10, 20, 30 bucks a year.
That was like $40 right now or something like that?
It's something like that, yeah.
Okay.
That can change and it's assessed each year based on the cost to administer the programs.
Okay.
There was a cancellation fee that was initially instituted in the program. Through our efforts and the efforts of some other realtor associations, that was essentially waived, and they no longer provide that.
You know, you bring up a really good point, because this is where Bright Idea hits the actual street, and the realtor can feed back and say, this is a problem, because I'm losing listings, or I'm losing a sale, or somebody's losing loans, because at the end of the day, at the end of the 30-day escrow, we hit this 30 grand wall, and we really don't have a solution for it. No lender's going to take second position. No one can write the 30 grand check, or no one's willing to. So therefore, we don't have a transaction and a sale. And, I think in general, it's a decent idea that needs some tweaking. And that's, I guess that's what you guys have just done, is you wrote the letter to those guys, in July? And a pretty quick response, as far as I'm concerned, August, 15th or 25th, they come back and say,
Well, we'd been working with Renovate America and WRCA going back to almost a year ago now. In fact, 1 year ago last week. And those efforts were not going very far. And unfortunately, there was a lot of frustration, which led us. We weren't looking to take a position against the program like we did ultimately. And our board directors, in fact, ours as well as that of two other realtor associations in the area, representing the entirety of the cities of Western Riverside County, ultimately took that same position because of frustration that not enough was being done to address the problems of the program, which was at that point creating roadblocks to sales, which we will always oppose.
And it's sort of a new program, but you might have 20,000 homes that have something that would be a problem, which you really don't need.
Yeah. Correct.
That's not 200,000, but it's getting there.
There were consumers utilizing this program, 3, 4, 5 years ago. We weren't even seeing these problems until the resale issue. So it's been the last 2 or 3 years we've been able to see them.
What is the process of non-payment? I can't make it. I can't make the hero payment. So what happens?
Currently, they would have a right to initiate a foreclosure.
After 5 years, like a tax bill?
They would have the right to initiate foreclosure at whatever point to determine that they're not getting paid.
So it's much more like a loan than a tax.
In that sense, it's more like a loan than a tax.
Wow.
They do not wait for the tax lien to go into, because you can't make a partial payment. You can't pay your other property taxes
right.
and not pay this one. It's all or nothing.
So they have the best of both worlds. They have the foreclosure rule of a loan, but the first position of a tax lien. I'm going to get into that business.
So currently they have the ability to initiate that. We're not aware of them having done so. Now, in many cases where there's finance transactions, you have the tax bill being part of the mortgage payment because of impounds. That's a more likely scenario where it starts to create a default of the entire property. And we've seen that take place.
But probably not a lot. It's just because.
Not a lot.
But part of it's because of the nature of the market. Right. A pretty healthy market. If you have a problem market, this isn't going to help it. This will just add one more straw to the camel's back kind of thing. And you go,
Well, one of the questions we've been asked is it reasonable for FHA and FHFA to take this position of opposition and not allowing this to take precedence to their interests? And what we point out is that imagine this is 2005 and not 2015. And 2007 and 8 is coming down the line. And you have one county, Riverside County, which now has 800, 900 million worth of these out there, which will eat away entirely at Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac's interest and whoever it is that owns those notes down the line. If that happens, you can just start ratcheting up the cost of the bailout and multiply that by number of counties, number of cities, number of states that take advantage of this.
Technically, if the hero loan started foreclosure, they would notify the lender, according to California law, and the lender would write a check. That would make sense.
Yeah, if they went down that path.
Does anyone know the actual sale process? In a trustee sales, it's a public sale, and there's bids and all that. Do we know what the process is of this?
I don't.
I haven't heard anything yet.
They haven't gotten to that part of the law yet, probably. Wow.
Now, we do anticipate that a lot of this will be addressed very differently in the near future.
Right.
It is just not sustainable that this program remains in this priority position, given that the secondary market, the taxpayer-backed enterprises, to be quite honest with you, are the ones who are going to bear the brunt of these costs. when there is a market downturn, and it's always a matter of when. So that's a we're looking at changes coming from federal government through FHA that will include most of these loans, which will not only subordinate the existing loans, but the future loans, but also subordinate the existing loans. So we anticipate that in the next couple of years, this is going to change, but there are going to be remaining problems, as well as a real cost to how we do this with the homeowners who have already taken this money out.
You know, as a realtor, the things have changed a lot in the last few years to where, you know, as far as explanation of when people borrow money and so forth. And this seems to be almost like a wild card in its own little world to where are there restrictions on who's explaining the HERO loan program to people? I mean, are these qualified people do they have some acknowledgement that the people are actually understanding what they're being told?
Well, that's a great question. And it's one that we addressed very early on in the program, which was, you know, who's selling this product and do consumers really understand what it is they're signing up for? Because we were hearing a number of people coming to us that had utilized the program that had major concerns and truly did not understand what it meant, not the least of which was the concern that they could transfer the property to the buyer. And when the new buyer would come in and say, well, my lender, FHA, whomever, won't do a loan on the property, the seller who got the HERO loan is now concerned. What's going on? I was told it could transfer. So the short answer is no, there wasn't a significant amount of training and explanation to the consumer relative to how this program really works.
It's a very confusing product for the general public.
Yeah, it's a confusing option for me, and I've been around a while. In other words, this is the hybrid of all hybrids.
And we've heard all manner of misunderstandings. For instance, the explanation that you pay this back through your tax bill. Some consumers that talked to us told us that the way they understood and the way the contractor explained it, and in many cases it was contractors explaining financial products to the homeowner, they thought that it simply diverted a portion of their tax payment to pay off for the
Oh, it didn't even increase it.
Right. They didn't understand that it would go up.
Right.
They thought, so I pay $3,000 a year in taxes, whatever it is, so some amount of that's going to pay for this now, so I get the free windows. That was, you know, that's probably the most extreme level of misunderstanding, but we've heard a number of instances of just that version, not to mention other versions that are somewhat similar to that. There wasn't enough done to educate consumers. They were expected to read these contracts and understand them. We held a forum on this issue, which included the attorney who helped create this program in the first place.
And okay.
That question was asked to him by the public. How is a consumer to understand this? And he said, well, they should have their attorney review the documents. Like, what homeowner has their attorney review documents so that they can borrow money to put in an AC unit?
In Florida, that might be a common statement, but not in California.
Right. Or have he's also mentioned their accountant. Again, that's a level of expertise. There's a reason why there's realtors, a reason why there's title companies, there's a reason why there's escrow companies. It's because the consumer can't be expected to understand the mechanics of a financial transaction that involves real estate. It's extremely complicated.
Well, not only that, but you'd have to explain to them, okay, you can't get a refi from now on, just so you're aware. I mean, right? I mean, you close that door, and I'm sure that they didn't think about that.
They didn't understand it.
If you're the borrower. What size of the loans are we talking about? What is the typical range of services that end up getting done?
Typical range of services?
Well, in other words, cost of the services. So, you know, whether it's roof or windows, whatever we're talking about. 10 grand liens or 50 grand liens?
They're not very forthcoming with the overall information, but what they have provided to us and what we've discovered on our own has been in the range of 20 to 25,000 is a very standard number. We've seen as high as mid 40s. I don't think I've seen more than 50,000. I've heard stories, and we've seen some that were as little as $6,000 or $7,000, but the majority have been in that 20 to 25,000 range.
There's no clause necessary in the loan docs, because it would be very difficult to become superior to another lien other than your tax bill. So that'd be a very interesting set of docs. Have you seen the set of docs?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
And they have been, I want to say this as well, they have been improved significantly. A year ago when we were working on this issue, the information about how it affects your future interest in the property and your ability to sell, refinance, was essentially subparagraph D, page 8, so you have to go look for it and understand it. Now there's a much better disclosure document that explains that there are some issues that you have to be concerned about and that you should look into as it relates to financing in the future, and that there's problems there. Do consumers understand what that means? I don't know. But at least there's something more reliable and more forthcoming than there used to be, and we are happy about that.
Okay. No, I think you guys are doing a great service, because I could see how this could really affect somebody very negatively, trying to sell their home and using up some of their equity and maybe a lot of their equity where they're stuck.
Well, there were people early on when they were being told that the debt followed the new buyer.
Yeah.
They were literally making the improvements, getting ready to sell the property. That was one of the ideas. Let's make these improvements. Let's get our house at a higher value and we won't have to pay for it. That ended up obviously not being the case in most transactions.
I can see a new movie being created. Have you ever seen the movie Tin Men?
Yes.
Okay. Tin Men 2. All right. I've let my imagination run wild a little bit in Florida, because this program is available in Florida.
Yes.
Okay. So now we could have hurricane retrofits. Earthquake, yes, retrofits in California. Now, it's not part of the program now, but in other words, this concept.
There was a bill for that last year.
Okay. Yeah. So you could just see this following through. The one thing it's better than is a mandatory program at the end of closing that you say you have to retrofit something.
Absolutely.
Correct.
So this is nice that it's voluntary. What is the changes FHA is going to make as far as the lien position? It's going to say it doesn't take the place of a first?
FHA made an announcement back in August that almost point by point addressed every issue that we've raised as a matter of concern on PACE lending. When it comes, the big part of that is that these loans cannot supersede the interests of the payment priority for the first money mortgage.
And that is not just for FHA, that is carte blanche?
Well, this is FHA, but FHA is working with Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac through FHFA.
Right.
And they intend to issue joint guidelines, which will follow along these lines. Now, whatever guidelines they create aren't necessarily binding on anybody except anyone who wants to borrow money from Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or FHA, or have the mortgage insured through them. So it will take some action at a state-by-state level or some private action by the issuers of these PACE programs to somehow subordinate their interests to Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and FHA. Now, in our discussions with Renovate America as well as the other providers, they say that they intend to comply with that and try to find a way of getting that done. Because if they don't, there's going to be some penalty in the marketplace that this program has these challenges if you're a consumer. And I know the realtors will be very active in directing people to the one that's going to have the least amount of problems later on. So there's going to be a penalty if they don't follow those guidelines that subordinate their interests to whoever owns the first lien mortgage.
Now you have a very different bond, though, right?
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, now you have a tax bill at the top 10% of equity, not the bottom.
Yes.
That could be worthless.
And that is...
So now you have a bond failure.
This is a discussion that I've had with executives of Renovate America, how they intend to actually do this, given that they're bond investors.
Yeah, if you're a bond investor in the first 10% of equity, that's a no-brainer. It's just, right, of course. At the last 10%, that's a hard money loan in second position, forget it. You're gone.
Yeah, this is very different. And we're looking at interest rates right now that are in the mid-8s with 6 points charge. We're looking at effective APRs that are 11 and 12% on these loans. And that's with first priority on the...
And with no proof of repayment possibility,
correct,
too.
Correct.
It's really an amazing tool.
We anticipate that if they make those changes, credit worthiness is going to be a factor, or at least would have to be. If you're going to be the investor backing these bonds,
you need
a different kind of security in order to be comfortable that you're going to see your money back.
Well, it'll likely be more expensive as well.
Yes.
More expensive on the loan?
Yes.
We would anticipate the risk that because you're introducing risk that doesn't currently exist. Right now, this might be the, if you're the investor on this,
yeah,
this might be the safest
it is.
Product right, that exists yield on the planet.
Well, but the other one is the most dangerous. It's a subprime second. And so I'm wondering how you'd fund it. I mean, that would be a real tough sale to anybody with money. Here, but yeah, get behind 90% first with a 10% second. I don't care what it yielded. You would be, nah.
Right.
Yeah. Not in billions of dollars. I mean, you would have a hard time funding very much of that.
And in policy circles, especially when you have the environmental community on one side that wants this done.
Yeah.
And you have the consumer advocates as well as the lending institutions on the other side of this. This is where it's coming down to a debate where there's not really much of a middle ground. We have to find a way of getting this done without damaging consumers while meeting the promises on environmental reforms that the governor and the state legislature have made on our behalf. That's not going to be easy to do.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I never in my life imagined I would see that it could become a first and superior to an existing lien. So I am going to pay attention to this. We only have 5 minutes. Let's talk a little bit about the market. Surprises for 2015, 2015?
Not really. I think if anything, if you looked at the market the last year, it's the proverbial tortoise versus the hare. It's been very much a tortoise year. I mean, if you look at the economy, we've seen job growth, some wage growth, nothing significant.
Right.
And if you look at the housing market, we've seen good numbers, positive numbers on more listings coming into the market, higher sales volume, higher pending actions for sale property, including median sales price that are about up 5 or 6%. So nothing dramatic, just kind of slow, steady gains in almost every positive category.
We've never had this kind of year with this set of charts, though. This is, you know, this is the stuff that I look at. So anytime we have this set of charts, this high affordability, this low ratio of foreclosures to sales, you know, where it's really the owner-occupant-driven person that's selling, when we have unemployment that's as where it's at, normally we're off to the races with a, you know, 15% gainer, and we're screaming to the top of the next peak, and we don't have that. So literally, this is the first time in history we have this set of charts and this result. So why the blasé reaction? What, because the is the buyer not showing up, or are they not capable of getting a yes answer?
Well, I think there's more restrictions, obviously, on the lending side that we've seen maybe in previous boom cycles. I think the bigger issue is we're looking at home values now that are truly tied to wage levels. When we saw prices jump up in the early and mid 2000s, there was a disconnect between home values and median income for our region. At that time, there was anywhere from 15 to 20% of the people that had median income could even afford to buy a house in the Inland Empire. Now, depending on what county, what area, it's anywhere from 40 to 55% of the people that work here can afford to buy a house. That's reasonable. That's what you would look for in a healthy, stable market. So the idea of us seeing our values jump up 10 or 15% in a year, not likely. We saw our big jump in 2012 and 2013, which is 25% in a 12-month period. In the last 6 months, it's been flat. We haven't seen any increase in the last 6 months, and very steady.
San Francisco. So their affordability rate is 13. They go up 25% last year. So there's a disconnect if you want to look at how much they make and how much their property is worth. At the peak of last time, it was 900. Now it's 1,350. So what's the difference there? Because it makes no sense that the guy that's working there can afford what that product is.
Sure. San Francisco is truly an anomaly. There's a few areas even in Orange County where there's just it's not a normal market. Areas like Orange County, 15 to 20% of people that live there and work there can afford to buy a house there. But that's been okay because that's been a feeder market for the Inland Empire. We've seen a number of people coming out of LA and Orange County that look to the Inland Empire as an affordable alternative. And I don't see that changing. We are going to be the housing choice for much of those two counties.
I agree with you. What's interesting is that the builder hasn't responded by building anything that's normal product numbers at all, including subdivisions. We're down still 85% in subdivisions. So what are they looking at that is making them afraid, do you think?
I don't know exactly. I think they've been cautious. I know that the project Ontario Ranch, for example, I think it's about a 1,500 home project that they launched late last year, about a year ago right now, and sales have been picking up there. A lot of it's pricing. A lot of it means they have to be competitive with existing home sales. So if they're building a product that's, say, for example, $500,000 and it's a 2,800 square foot house, if there are other homes in the market that are selling for $420,000 that are commensurate, that may be 6 or 8 years old, same square footage, they're going to be at a challenge.
Yeah, and I think you nailed it right on the head, because on where the lots are available, let's say South Riverside County is where you had you're building 3,000 to 4,000 square foot houses. That was the tract. Well, now you have to foreclose on all those homes, and now they have to go through the filter. They're still for sale for under $80 a foot, let's say, in Hemet.
Yes.
Well, you can't build that. There's no way.
Correct.
So you could have a bunch of lots there, but you can't perform on them.
Right.
So you just go, I guess I have to wait.
And you have a regulatory environment that's not friendly to any of this development in any form, especially if you have to redo tract maps and get new approvals.
And expenses, they're looking to raise money, so sometimes they raise permits just because they need the money.
I think if builders have the opportunity for higher density product and smaller units, they would have an opportunity to sell more.
Absolutely, if they can get approval.
If they can.
Mark and Paul, been great talking to you guys. Really appreciate you coming in.
Thank you, sir.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.